Unbillable Hour Community Table, where real lawyers from all around the country with real issues they are dealing with right now meet together virtually to present their questions to Christopher T. Anderson, lawyer and law firm management consultant. New questions every episode, and none of it scripted. The real conversations happen here. Starting off the episode is an attorney who is trying to balance hiring and law firm growth.
I have a firm that's growing, growing, growing. I'm laying the track in front of my little choo-choo train as fast as I can. I hope my sound's okay. I've got to, for some reason.
Your sound is great. You're doing fine.
Okay.
I mean, other than there's this like little, I don't know what it is with your microphone, but you're coming through with a Texas accent. I don't know if you can dial that back a little bit, but.
Yeah, I'll try. I'll try real hard, y'all. But you know what I'm thinking about right now, sort of the journey. Let's see. It's regarding hiring excess capacity is the topic. You know, I'm trying to balance having enough cases and enough work to do. Boop, boop, boop. My pendulum has swung both ways and I'm trying to level that out. And what I find the decision in front of me right now is I have one attorney due to start. I've identified another person that I would like. I think she wants to come here. And if I also hired her in addition to my team, I'm going to have some excess capacity. I'm just trying to, I guess my question is, if there are any good rules of thumb that you or whomever does in terms of getting it right of how many to bring on. And I know so many people struggle with hiring, and I've been in that place, I guess, in the past. Right now I have, I guess there are five of us, going to be six when she starts, and this other person would be the seventh. Some of the ones who are here, I'm not 100% sure they'll be here forever, right? So I'm just trying to get that balance right of bringing people on before I'm in desperate need. Any thoughts?
Oh, yeah.
I guess.
There is no balance. That's your thought. What you've described is what most people do, which is the seesaw. Get some more team? Shit. Need cases. Get some more cases? Shit. I'm out of people. And then you get in the mud. And people just go back and forth going like, oh, I got to fill that hole. 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 Right. So how do we not do that? We not do that. Really, Chris? We avoid doing that by having a business plan. We avoid doing that by declaring the one thing that you can control. Because you can't control whether team member A or team member B meets their KPIs. You can control the consequences and you can control hiring better people. But, you know, that you can't control. You can't control if the market becomes a harder to hire market or an easier to hire market. You can't control that either. The one thing that you really can control is how fast you grow the number of cases that come in the door. Because you can get your marketing dialed in and you can get your sales team dialed in. And so you can get to a point where if you increase your marketing by X percent, you have a pretty good idea that within 2 months, your number of new clients coming in will increase by Y percent. And a good marketing and sales machine, which is your primary responsibility, becomes a stereo dial. You just turn it up. And the first few times you adjust it, you don't know what the output's going to be, because it's very interesting. Sometimes a small move on the dial creates a big change in a new client, and sometimes not so much. And you have to fiddle with it a little bit to get there. But then once you've fiddled with it a couple times, you know. So for 2024, you know, how much are you going to grow? How many new cases are you going to get in January and February and March and April and May and June and July and August, September, October, November, December? How many cases are you going to close during that time? Because you know your average time on desk. Therefore, you know then what your total files in-house will be during that time. Once you know that, you know how many people you need per file or how many files per person, and then you know what your hiring plan is. And it is perfectly acceptable to get out there and say, I'm hiring. And when people are interested, say this, you know, you're great. I really like you. I'd like you to start in December. Would that work for you? You know, that's one of the things that we've been doing. It's like we're building out our hiring pipeline just like you build out a sales pipeline. And, you know, just because you interviewed somebody, you like them and you think they're a great match doesn't mean they have to start tomorrow. You know, you're not hiring people to some extent, right? I think it's hard to hire a year out because they might go find another job in the meantime, but you can certainly get a couple months out.
Probably, yeah, I'd say out. At least 60 days for people. Like the one I'm thinking of, she wants to come here. It's different than like, oh my God, I need somebody, come on. And my thinking was if I got it set up for, let's say she would agree in December, and then something changes with the staffing, little things that make me uncomfortable, I could say, hey, could you come sooner? Right. Things have changed.
Right. Yeah. It's easier to pull them in. You don't want to ever delay it. And, you know, and let's face it, sometimes you're going to eat a little bit of lack of productivity, but you can at least stagger it out. So you're taking one bite at a time. The cool thing is also where you are from this moment forward. You're not at the worst part. One hire ago was the worst part, but from here out, adding people to your team becomes less and less painful because let's say when you only had one person, right? Well, then when you add another person, you with your current number of cases, you've now gone to 50% productivity, right? And then you fill everybody's dockets and now you've got two people full and you add a third person. Well, now you've gone to 67% productivity. Now you've got three people full and then you add a fourth person. Now you're at 75% productivity. The fifth person, 80%. The next person, 83%. The next person, like, you know, it just, you get to a point where you never, during those first few ones, you will actually dip into non-profitability, right? You'll dip into the red. But after about the sixth or seventh person, you just become slightly less profitable for a short period of time and then more profitable than ever afterwards.
Because it seems like I can get them because the marketing thing, I do feel like I'm at the point of the dial. And so it seems to me, I don't have the same kind of, I just don't worry about, I'm going to have enough for them to do.
Yeah. Like you tell me when you've reached 10% of your addressable market share, and then we'll worry about you not being able to get, you know, significant new clients. And then we'll talk about geographical expansion. Right. But like I venture to say, because I know your economic area, you're nowhere near 10% market share. And so you've got plenty of running room.
Right. Okay.
But so stop with the balance. You make a plan. This is how many new cases and this is how many people I need and when, right? In our business, we know exactly how many we're going to hire all the way through December of 2024 right now. We know all this. We know which roles we're going to hire. We know it's going to go faster and faster and faster. So like from about 3 months ago, like we're never stopping recruiting and we're just going to start putting more and more dollars behind it. But it's all driven by the revenue plan. That's what we can control. And then we just hire accordingly.
What's hard though is like my business plan, whether they're helping me do, is sort of the team that I have now, plus like just the thing I know I'm going to need in the first quarter. And that's the goal number. But it doesn't, I guess for me, that's hard to know where it ends because that's going to already, that plan is going to double me as it is. I should have ended higher than I am now.
Why is it going to double you?
Because of the current team that's in place now, they'll be up to speed and adding like the mentoring attorney and one other and everybody doing what they're supposed to do, which was not the case. It's going to make me double again.
Why is doubling what you want to do?
I don't know that.
With all due respect, that's a bullshit plan.
I felt it baked in the cake. Like this is just sort of the yield of what I currently have is going to yield.
Yeah, don't you let anybody tell you what your revenues are going to be at the end of next year. The only person who can define that is you, because you're the only person who knows what that means to you and whether it's important, what that does for you, what that does for your life, what it does for your family. Anybody,
what it's going to do is so far beyond my even comprehension at the moment. That it's hard to know because I really think, because they tell me it and I'm like, I really think we're going to do a lot more than that. But I make everybody stressed out when I say that.
It's just got to be what you want because you're not the owner of that future firm, whatever that number it is. And you're going to need to do some things to become that owner. You're going to need to get some skills. You're going to need to hire some other people other than lawyers at some point.
Yeah, for sure. We got a whole, there's like 25 of us. We got a whole like four other non-lawyer folks. The infrastructure. That's the goal, is to get a really solid infrastructure this year. Because like whatever the amount of money, they're talking about me bringing home seven figure money. Like, okay, how much would you like to make? Well, that sounds real good. Yeah,
bullshit. No, listen, what sounds really good, you will do what is convenient to get to the dollar amounts that sound real good. The question is, what will it take to do what it takes? And not everybody.
It's not about money for me.
No, it's never about money. It's about what the money does for you and your family and your lifestyle and your savings and your future and the.
It buys me creative freedom to do my other stuff. That's right.
But so we have to figure out, how much does it cost to get that creative freedom to do your other stuff? How much time do you need? Because the more you need to be out of the business, then we need to backfill some more people, which is going to reduce profitability, which is fine. But then when we reduce profitability, we got to say, okay, when profitability is reduced, the revenue numbers got to go up in order to continue to fund what I want. It's not hard. We just have to go through those steps, and it takes a little bit of time and a little bit of pain.
Delegate out those tasks that take up your time. Staffy can help you with your legal, administrative, marketing, and even client-facing workload. Hiring Staffy's top-notch bilingual virtual staff means Staffy does the recruiting, hiring, and training for you. Then, if you need a change, Staffy handles it. You get to concentrate on your strategic work. Schedule a free consultation at staffy.cc. That's STAFI.cc, and get $500 off with code HAPPY24.
Nearly 80% of people search for lawyers online. They visit websites and check reviews. If your site doesn't appear in the top search results or it presents poorly, you risk losing clients. That's why you must know how your firm stacks up on Google against the competition. See how your reviews impact clients' decisions and how you can get better results from your site. Get an unbiased marketing performance report in under a minute right now at Grow Law Firm, and that's growlawfirm.com/unbillable. Once again, growlawfirm.com/unbillable.
Next up is an attorney who is looking for new marketing approaches to grow the business.
I think that my biggest issue this year's marketing, we're late to the game because we haven't finalized our 2024 marketing plan. And then we've got to figure out, what new ways can we bring in business? We market to the probate world and we market to the family world, which means that we have to divide our marketing dollars too, but we're trying to figure out new ways of bringing in business.
Let's unpack a little bit. So first of all, congratulations on the firm.
Thank you.
What, first I'm going to have to attack in a second, actually. So second, I'm going to have to attack why the hell you don't have your numbers from December. It's January 18th. Cannot drive in our rearview mirror. But we'll get there second. The first thing I want to do is before we decide on what you need to do, why don't you tell me what you've been doing? Like, what have you been doing for your firm over 2023? And how's it been working for you?
So we spent about 9% of our gross revenues towards marketing last year. We have multiple vendors. So we have our SEO vendor. We have a backup SEO vendor. We have Avvo. We do a lot of community outreach in the Arab American community. So we did a bunch of different cultural events.
No paid search?
We do. Yes, you're right. We do PPC and we do LSAs.
Okay.
And PPC throughout the year, we used them for about 11 months last year. We used Empirical, who we love. Great people, great company. However, one client that retained in 11 months. So results were crappy.
Yeah, that is pretty crappy, but we got to figure out where that is in the funnel. All right. Why two SEO providers?
So we have Blue Shark as our main SEO provider. Our ops manager had a friend who was also providing supplemental SEO services. And so we tried him out last year. He's phenomenal. And that's why we have two. Whatever our main SEO provider is lacking, he's supplementing.
Okay. And just out of curiosity, do you ever take that back to Blue Shark and say, hey, how come you guys aren't doing this stuff?
100%. And their answer is, you got to spend more money for us to be providing X, Y, and Z. It just doesn't make financial sense to me. I'm not going to spend an extra $5,000 to $10,000 a month when I can get somebody else to do it and probably do a better job.
Excellent. Good decision. All right. Final question, I think. 9% gross revenue on marketing. What do you count towards that 9%?
Anything marketing related. So all the vendors I told you previously, everything we spent on them, any marketing materials that we had to buy for the different festivals, anything marketing related.
So you do include, let's say with your paid search company, you do include their fee as well as the ad spend?
Correct.
Okay. I would challenge you to separate the two. It's good to track both, but you want to know what you're spending on direct, what's called MAP spend, marketing, advertising, promotion spend. So the material's great, advertising to paid to advertisers, paid to digital search. SEO is kind of a muddy place for that. So I count what I'm paying for SEO, but not anybody internal to my business that's doing copy. But that, you know, these are discretionary calls. It's not that important, but I do encourage you to separate them just so you can see, because for instance, with advertising spend, you could often increase your advertising spend without increasing the overhead on it. And so it's important to know which levers you have. A total of 9%, not bad. What is your revenue goal for 2024?
3.5.
Okay. And how much of an increase is that?
It's going to be between 600,000 to 700,000 increase.
25%. Okay. Very reasonable growth. What's your hypothesis for where you're going to get that growth from?
If we can fix the marketing issue in this first quarter, I actually think we'll probably exceed our goal, but I need to figure out new ways of bringing in business. And if we're able to do that, then that's my guess. I need to see where we need to invest more money with which vendors, depending on the numbers from 2023, which vendors we need to cut and which new vendors we need to be seeking out.
Okay. So what you're saying is I don't know where I'm going to need to grow this because I don't know where my ROIs are.
Correct.
Okay. Valid. But when are you going to get your numbers?
Before the end of this month.
All right. That's 2 more weeks. Have you looked at that funnel to see where, like, were you not getting leads? Did the leads suck? Were they not showing up? Where was it falling down? And if you don't have the numbers, just say anecdotally. I mean, you run your business. What was going on with the paid search?
I don't think that we had anybody on top of tweaking the language to be able to see on a month-to-month basis what was working on the pay-per-click campaigns and what weren't. So we were just running the same campaign for months. And I think there might have been a different outcome had we had somebody on top of that.
You gave me a diagnosis, but you haven't told me the symptom yet. So, okay, that's why you think it failed. Fine. But what failed? And if you don't know, that's okay. But that's the analysis we need to do. Whether the copy was good or bad or whatever, okay, that might be true. But until you tell me where it fell down, here, let me give you an example. I had a client who was all flummoxed. They were doing an email campaign and they weren't getting any leads from the email campaign. So they kept adjusting the email content, the copy, to try to fix it, to try to make it better. And then finally, I asked the same question I'm asking you, like, what's the problem? And they said, well, the open rate sucks. Like, the open rate's like way below what we were expecting. I'm like, so why are you jerking around with the copy? No one's seeing it. You're working on the thing that doesn't matter. So that's why you have to do a funnel analysis. What they needed to work on was subject lines. That's it. The copy didn't matter until we get people opening the emails. Like, it doesn't matter if there was no copy. Like, so we got to work our way down the funnel and fix it from the top down. So, you know, with your paid search, were you getting impressions? Were you getting clicks? Were those clicks converting? Where were they converting? Were they booking? Were they showing up? Were they closing? Now, you say you only closed one, but so that means that somewhere up the funnel was your biggest leak. Do you know where it was?
I generally know from having the monthly phone calls that we were getting the leads. We had the numbers that we wanted. Those leads, once we tried to schedule them, were either looking for free services, so the wrong audience. So we were able to eliminate them and make them unqualified leads from the get-go. And then from the ones that actually did schedule, we weren't affordable.
Definitely. If that could be a copy problem. Could be. Could be a targeting problem. And then the we weren't affordable could be a truth or it could be a sales problem. Because that statement almost always, to me, means you haven't convinced me of your value. You haven't educated me sufficiently as to the value of your services. Because if you let them get through, to the call, and then they found you too expensive, that may be a sales issue. Listen, I'm sitting here on the, you know, 20-minute or 10-minute conversation, I'm not going to be able to figure that out for you. But that's easily enough figured out. So I'm glad to hear that you got the leads. So we have to look elsewhere in the funnel. Copy could improve the quality of leads, and or targeting could improve the quality of the leads. So we could look there. And then I would look all the way back down to the sales motion. What's the glide slope like? And how fast are we getting to them? Needs to be, in family law, it needs to be 45 minutes or less.
Immediate.
Okay. And then what's being, when they get that price objection, what are we saying? And how are we dealing with it before they say it? That's the best time to deal with it, before they say it out loud, so you don't have to make them wrong. So I wouldn't give up on paid search. If you're getting the leads, we can fix the rest. And it's just, you know, like, I think you put a finger on it, might be copy and other and targeting and then sales. So, I mean, if you fix that, that could be a long way towards helping you. 25% again is very reasonable. You then said, I wanted to have new ways to try. You're ready for a 2-point-something million business, have a lot of ways. And LSA, how's LSA been doing for you? Do you think? I mean, no, you don't have the numbers.
It's very similar to our PPC. It started off really strong when we were like the first players in the game. And then everybody heard about LSA and now it's gone downhill. But then again, my marketing assistant slacks me today and says, we've gotten 2 people to retain this year from LSA. So then I'm like, what in the world is going on? So it's like a roller coaster.
You mean this year as in this month? Good. So the biggest takeaway for me would be, you're right, you do need the numbers, but we need to make hypotheses now so that we can start to test them and move forward. We can't stop because we don't have the numbers. Secondly, I want to turn over to Rob just a little bit, because Rob said something really important that I think is applicable here, which is he talked about don't throw it all out. You adjust and move forward. So Rob, you want to just elaborate a little bit on where you would be if you were advising her on the marketing effort here?
Well, from the revenue numbers you're describing year over year, you had a pretty good year. So whatever you're doing is working. Did it work better? Do we need better data? Yes. But in general, you're doing the right things. I'm sure you know the number one and number two sources of most of your leads, right? So while we're waiting for the data to come in and make some additional decisions, nurture those sources, take care of those sources, expand those sources. Obviously, once the data comes in, we need to make sure 2024 is a different year, that we have total marketing data by channel. You know the cost per lead, you know your conversions, you know the cost per client, and we know the quality of the leads coming in. So that's the good news. That sounds like at the end of this month, maybe beginning of February, the firm will be in a really good position to make these types of decisions. But I wouldn't be too hard on yourself. Whatever you're doing is working. Nurture your number one and number two sources of your leads and stick with it. Tweak things as you go. And just make sure, the bottom line is, going forward, every single person, every single PNC, the source of that lead needs to be recorded. It's a must. It's a mandatory field in your intake, okay? It is a must. Yes, we know that everyone says, well, it came from Google. And that used to mean one or two things. Now it can mean like 5 different things. But we can narrow it down and we can ask the question more than once. So I'd recommend that we make sure we are recording all the sources for the leads. And on your P&L, I encourage you to make sure that everything isn't dumped into a marketing or advertising line item. Break it out by channel. So pay-per-click, SEO, events, whatever it is. And then we can very easily, even on a monthly or quarterly basis, determine how much did you spend per channel? How many leads came in? How many clients did we get? And we can make some additional decisions based on that data.
Find out how TimeSolve fits your firm. With 6 different ways to track time, surely one will fit, even on the go. Or quickly estimate flat fee projects. Batch payments for hundreds of invoices at once with TimeSolve Pay. Getting paid quickly is a great fit. And TimeSolve fits with the other tools you use. QuickBooks, LawPay, NetDocuments, LawRuler, Microsoft, all just plug in. Try TimeSolve free
get a $100 Amazon gift card when you sign up. TimeSolve.com. Law Clerk's nationwide network of talented freelance lawyers is trusted by thousands of law firms. Solo attorneys and firms can get help with project-based work and also ongoing work via a subscription. Sign up is free and there are no monthly fees. You only pay when you delegate work. Plus, Law Clerk has a new app for your mobile device to help you manage the work you've delegated while you're on the go. Be sure to use referral code UNBILLABLE when you sign up at lawclerk.legal.
Our last question is from an attorney who wants to implement a minimum billable hours requirement to an associate.
How do I roll out a billable requirement minimum to a associate who's been longstanding and never really had one, understands conceptually sort of that he should have one, but we've never documented it. And I don't want to take the approach of just shoving it in his face with a piece of paper. So how would you approach that? Kind of reinstituting a new protocol and documenting it.
Rob, how would you do that?
I would be pretty direct about it. Number one, I'd want to know what the billable requirement is. And historically, has this associate been hitting it?
So let's assume you're an associate who doesn't care what the billable requirement is and has no idea whether he hits it or not. He just flies by the seat of his pants in any given day, in any given month, in any given week.
I'm asking you, though. This associate doesn't record their hours at all?
No, they record their hours. There's just no, in my opinion, there is no yearning to understand that there is a target to hit.
Okay. Again, I would still hit it dead on. I'd let him or her know that in order to pay their salary, that everyone has to hit billable targets. That's the way the firm works. Those are the assumptions that we base our budget on. And that's how we can pay everyone's salary. Couple things here. Hours must be entered, and there has to be accountability for the targets. So if this associate doesn't hit targets, whether it's weekly, monthly, quarterly, it doesn't matter, there has to be some type of action taken with respect to that. It can't be an empty requirement. There has to be accountability. There has to be consequence. There has to be remedial actions. But yeah, you know, you're the owner of the firm. Everyone who works for you should have a billable hour requirement, and it needs to be followed. And it's not that I'm discounting what the associate would say or think. I'm saying that that's secondary in importance, because the firm is providing a nice standard of living for everyone who's working there. And the billable hour requirement is a really key component in hitting your revenue and your profitability goals.
And then I would follow that up with, what's in it for the associate? Like, why should the associate care?
So they don't get fired?
Can we think of a positive reason why they should care?
Oh, yeah. So they can provide more to their family. It puts them on track and has stability in their family and stability for their expenses and stability for their budget. And they should, I hate to should all over people, but they should want this. I think it's a fleeting. And what Rob's saying is obviously 100% accurate. Like, I can do all the things I want to do, but it doesn't sink in sometimes that this is important for the associate as well. Like, yeah, oh yeah, yeah, I understand it. But then in the moments when you have to bill and do billing.
So I would think of it this way then. I believe, you know, if you believe that this person would like to bring home more money, like if they don't care, like if they're independently wealthy or their spouse brings in all the money that they possibly could need to live, then this won't motivate. But if they are if they want to, just want to, that's enough. Because then you can approach this with, I think you want this and I want to help you get it. Just like with any medicine, you know, when you know, I want to be fit and look good. All right, I'm going to help you get that. Put on your running shoes. We're going out. And we're going, hey, I don't care if it's 15 degrees. We're going out. They might not like what it takes, but if you want to be fit, I'll help you get there. Do you want to get there? Then we're going to do it. You may like some of it. You may not like some of it. So the medicine I would prescribe then here is, you mentioned accountability. So I would put it in front of them every day,
at least every week. Here's what you did this week, or every, at least every billing cycle. Here's what you billed. Here's what was collected. Here's what's going to come to you. And this is what I do with my team, because like those numbers for a lot of lawyers, particularly, they like, they just go like this. I don't hear them until you do this. And if you continue on this path, you will make this much in the coming year. That annual number, that's one that attorneys know. They know what they bill per hour and they know what they make per year. They don't know what they make per month. They don't know what they make per week. And if you put it in those terms, it won't resonate. But if you say, if you keep this up, you'll make $198,000 this year. Boom.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
So if you can put that number in front of them every week or at least every billing cycle, that I think will be as close as you can get if that's what motivates them. If that's not what motivates them, you could say you are 10% on your way to a new Porsche or whatever else motivates them. It may be up to you to connect the action to the reward on a repeated and regular basis, because apparently this person's not going to do it for themselves.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a practical thing I can suggest.
No, that's very good. And it could be the negative too. Like, oh, you only billed 15 hours this week. If you keep on this track of 15 hours each week for the rest of the year, you're only going to earn $80,000.
Right. Exactly. So what can I, and then comma, what can I do to help? It is so hard to convince, I don't like the word convince, to make it clear to your team that you want them to make more money.
Right.
We are culturally not raised to believe that about our business leaders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's this sort of general ethos out there that, you know, the business owners are just out to screw their or exploit their employees. And that bonuses exist to be for just for you to be fooled by them and to get screwed out of them. Whereas good business owners, which I know you are, desperately want their employees to hit every target and earn every bonus and will help them do that. But so sometimes we have to repeat that and show it to help them believe it. And that's like the most motivating thing, because if they come to the conclusion that you are on their side with that, that is, you know, hugely motivating.
Thank you for listening. This has been the Unbillable Hour Community Table on the Legal Talk Network.
Learn by doing with Practicing Law Institute's award-winning on-demand interactive programs. Developed by experts in learning design, these immersive programs incorporate the latest in research-based instructional design and technology, allowing you to try out concepts, challenge yourself, and grow your skills using real-world scenarios. With programs focusing on professional development, client-facing skills, and law practice management, you can earn CLE while you learn. Launch now at pli.edu/interactive or download PLI's mobile app.